We're up to, we just began to begin, Kema Hashem, Im Shleimim V'chein Rabim, V'chein Ogoizu, V'ovor, V'inisich Loi A'anech Oil. Just do this one, we'll do another Pasuk. Okay, let's do three Pasukim together. Okay, so this Pasuk said, we learned yesterday the Mitzudas. The Pasuk said, basically, so says Hashem regarding Ninveh. Hashem now is about to destroy the city of Nineveh, and Hashem says, I'm going to completely obliterate you. Even if you'll be in a state of being shleimim, complete, you'll be ba'achtos, you will have chen rabim, you'll be numerous, you'll be abundant, you'll have every possible resource that one can have to survive an attack, to survive a natural disaster. It will not make one bit of a difference. We have the next words of chen. The word here, v'chein, according to the Mitzudas Tava, means nevertheless. The word v'chein no goizu is not the same v'chein as v'chein rabim. This is poetry. Nachum is using the word, the same exact word, twice. But when it says v'chein rabim, it means even if you are abundant. And then when we use exactly the same word in the next, after the word rabim, v'chein no goizu, here it means nevertheless. Even if you're abundant, and even if you're shalem, nevertheless, nagoizu, I will cut you down. V'ovar, you will pass from this world, you will cease to exist. V'inisich, I will afflict you, I will torture you, to the point, to the degree where it will not be necessary. A'anech o, to torture you anymore, because you will no longer exist. Next pasuk, pasuk Yud Gimel, v'yata now, Eshbar motehu me'aloyich, I will remove their. This refers simply to Klal Yisrael. Over here, he's addressing Klal Yisrael. I will break the mot. Motehu means the staff.
It's the same as in the Chukosai, Eshbar motehu sulchem. I will phrase.
The same phrase. So it means like a yoke. It means there are two parts to the yoke. This is the motehu me'aloyich, umoserosayich anatek, and the straps, the bonds. I will sever. Okay, let's see the Mitzudas Tavid on this Pasuk Yud Gimel. V'ata on page 549 on the very bottom in the Mitzudas Tavid. V'ata and now. Ritzon Eloimar bizman karov eshbar moteo me'oloich Yisrael. Ritzon Eloimar od lo yotzer loch. This Pasuk is addressing Klal Yisrael. We're shifting. The previous Pasuk was addressing Ashur. And now we're addressing the victim. The victim here is Klal Yisrael. They will no longer cause you pain. The moteyu is the badei. When the Mitzudos Sion says the badei ha'oil, the poles of the yoke. Kimo mos seros umotos. See, it's not so simple. What exactly is the oil? The truth is, it's a machlekes rishonim. I don't have over here a picture to show you, but in Masechta Kelim, the Mishnayis, they go through many different types of utensils and describe if it's makabel tuma. What part of the utensil is makabel tuma? What part of the utensil is not makabel tuma? And there, one of the Mishnayis describes in detail the yoke, and it describes the different parts of the yoke. The yoke is not such a simple thing. And if you study the Mefarshim, there is disagreement as to exactly what part of this apparatus is called the word oil. And the reason why it's important to know what that means is very simply because every single day, twice a day, when we say Kriya Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, we are Mekabel oil Malchus Shamayim, the yoke of heaven. What is the yoke of heaven? What does that mean? We just say these words. What exactly is the yoke of heaven? So if you go to the Mishnayis describe the various parts of the yoke. And there are motos, there are poles, there are straps that keep the poles anchored, keep the poles attached.
Is it in a wooden frame?
Yeah, it's a wooden frame, but it has many parts. There's a vertical part, the main part of the yoke has a vertical part and a horizontal. If you have the animal, make believe this tissue box is an animal, and let's take over here a napkin, okay? So improvise. This is the head, okay? Here's the head of the animal, right? Here's the head. The head is sticking out. And this is going to be the shoulders. So there are mainly two parts to the yoke. There is a pole that goes across the shoulders. And then there's a pole that goes from in the center of that pole to the back, all the way to the back of the animal, where it's hitched to a plow, to something, to some type of heavy tool. So, and there is a very critical section, a ring in the center. The ring in the center is critical, which connects there's no vertical and horizontal because the animal over here, everything is really horizontal, but along the shoulders, this portion, to connect that to this portion,
like a T.
There's like a ring, there's some type of ring. So that ring is the third portion of the yoke. Now when we say the yoke, the oil, what are we referring to? So if not for learning the Mishnayos, you would in general, the whole apparatus. The whole thing. A yoke has been by an engine. How many parts are there in an engine? Hundreds of parts, right? Hundreds of different parts to an engine. So the yoke, whatever, it includes all the different parts of the yoke. It's not so. In the Mishnayos, there are different parts to the yoke, and some parts are Tameh, some parts are Tahar, and there's a Machlekes in the Rishonim between the Rav, the Rambam. I don't remember this a long time ago since I learned this, and I used a very good safe, a very good picture book called Mishnah Behira. It's out of this world. This set of Mishnayos. It's very expensive. Mishnah Behira, and there the illustrations are beyond belief, with the clarity that's just out of this world. And there's a machlokes rishonim as to what exactly, what portion of the apparatus is called the yoke. And the nafka mina will be, what should a person's attitude be when he is mekabel ol malchus shamayim? And what is the nafka mina? What comes out from there? One portion of the yoke, I think that's the portion that goes along the shoulders, is there to do one thing, to suppress the animal, to humble it, to let the animal know who's in charge. You're not in charge. You're a slave to the master.
Control,
right, fine. And the other part, the vertical part, if you really look at the commentators, the goal is not, it's not suppression, it's to give it a mission, to give it direction, purpose. You take this portion which presses down upon and you connect it to this pole that is then going to be attached to a plow or other tool or some whatever. There are different things you can hitch an animal to. It provides direction and purpose. So, and it comes out, and you study the commentators, they're mutually exclusive. If you learn that the oil is the piece of the beam which goes along the length of the animal, then it's not referring to, the oil is not the part that goes along the width of the animal. If the oil literally means the portion that goes along the width of the animal, it's not referring to the portion of the part of the apparatus which goes along the length of the animal. And there are nafka minas lahalacha in the laws of tumah v'tahara to precisely define the meaning of the oil. Now when you take that machlokes rishonim forward in the world of machshava, like we do every single day when we say Kriya Shema, the purpose of Kriya Shema is to accept upon ourselves the yoke of heaven, what does that mean? Okay, that's one approach. Okay, one approach to our, but on a very simple approach is when you accept upon yourself the yoke of heaven, are you required just to acknowledge I'm a nothing in this world. I'm just a servant. There is a master, and I am suppressed. I have to suppress my existence, humble myself to the master. Is that the pshat? Or no, that's not the pshat. Kabbalas ol malchus shmai means I have a mission. I have a mission in this world. My mission is, it's the vertical part of the yoke. It attaches me to a function. The function to plow, the function to seed, whatever your function to plow, to shovel the snow, whatever you're going to hitch it to, there's a purpose. The The Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shmai means I have to be loyal to my mission. It's a whole different attitude in life.
But give the animal focus. They don't want the animal moving right. They want the animal going straight.
Right, so there are different parts. If you take away one part of that yoke, it will change the attitude, it will change the mindset of the animal. An animal has upon itself in the full yoke, with all of its parts, it forces the animal into a frame of mind. If you will take this apparatus and break and take off one portion of it, and somehow manage to keep the other portion on the animal, obviously it's not going to be functional 100% the way it was before, but whatever, you'll manage. Not everything in life is perfect. Okay, you'll figure out. It's going to change the attitude of the animal. The animal is going to behave differently. And do a case study. You know, it would be a very fascinating.
They have double yokes with two axes. The one that goes on the left always has to go on the left. You can't put them in the right.
Because it's trained. Right, right. Okay. But besides that, let's not talk about two. Let's talk even one. It's a complicated piece of equipment. And open up the Mishnayos in Masechet Kelim, and especially in the picture books, the ones that are very good illustrations. The best one that I know is Mishnah Behira. Since I learned Mishnah Behira, Art School came out with two editions. The Art School came out with Kelim. I never looked. They have color pictures there. They have nice different types of pictures in the Art School. I never looked, but I'm sure they must have some very nice things. But the Mishnah Behira is the illustrations are second to none. And if you take away one portion, it changes the attitude of the animal. So the question is, there appears to be a machlokes rishonim. What is the yoke? Is the yoke the beam that goes along the width of the animal or along the length of the animal? The beam that goes along the width of the animal humbles the animal. The beam that goes along the length of the animal gives the animal direction, purpose, mission. What is the person's kavana when he's makabel upon himself, ol ma'alchus shamayim? Is it to suppress himself, or is it to recognize he has a purpose, he has a mission? So the truth is, how do you translate the pasuk, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad? There are two translations. One translation is, Hashem is one. Nothing more we should know, Hashem is our God, and Hashem is one. Don't make any mistake and think that there's a God of day, a God of night, a God of good, a God of bad, a God for food, a God for drink, a God for the earth, a God for the air, and different elements like the Goyim. The Goyim in ancient times, they could not fathom there can be such a concept of a God of everything. How could there be a God of good and bad? Good and bad are contradictions. It cannot possibly be. They didn't understand this concept. We take it for granted. It's in our blood. In fact, it's in the blood of the whole world today. Even the Rambam says it's a very Christianity has a silver lining. Even though I don't know, the Rambam didn't see the churban they made for us. Okay, so the Rambam in his day, maybe he could have said that in his day. I don't know if we want to say that today, but the Rambam said that Christianity had a silver lining in that it brought the world to acknowledge monotheism. There's only one God. Only one God. There's no duality. There's no zugos. That's one translation. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Although in life there appear to be contradictions in Hashem's Hanhaga, there are many, many different mixed signals we get from Hashem. There's Racham and Din. Don't make any mistake about it. Hashem Echad. It's only one God. And Hashem is complex. And he deals with us different times, different ways, but there's a din v'cheshbon, Hashem Echad. And then there's another translation. Hashem Elokeinu. Today, okay, in the year Tavshin Pei, he's only our God. The Goyim don't really seem to be paying attention very much to a creator. They're not really with the program. But the day will come in the future when Hashem Echad, when Hashem will be acknowledged by the entire world, not only by us. Now look at those two translations. Those two translations fit perfectly with the machlokes rishonim. What is the meaning of a yoke? If a yoke is suppression, you put the board, the bad, that goes along the width of the animal, that fits the first interpretation. Hashem Elo, Hashem Echad, there's only one God. Humble yourself. Acknowledge the existence of one God. But if you learn the Pshat, Hashem today is only our God. But the day will come in the future when Hashem will be recognized as one through the entire world. How will that happen? Who will teach the entire world is a God? Who? We. We have a mission. And the mission is to bring the knowledge of Hashem's existence to the world, not through missionary work. That's not a Jewish way. It's through example, by example. When the Jewish people, by example, serve Hashem, people take note. There's a koich of magnetism. If a Klal Yisrael is doing what they're supposed to be doing, it creates a force in this world for everyone else to acknowledge, indeed, we are correct, there is a creator. So we have a mission. We have a mission. Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokim, who is only our God today. The day will come when he will be God over the entire world, when that mission will be achieved by the entire, the whole world will acknowledge how through us, a mission. Oh, that's the portion of the yoke that, the vertical portion of the yoke, which provides, along the length of the animal, which provides a mission, purpose, and direction. What?
I'm going to tell you something. Look at the word all. There's a lamed. Wait, what point up all.
All, yoke, all. Okay. Ayin vav lamed.
The lamed points up.
The Shemayim.
And it has a vertical line.
Okay.
And then it goes down. The ayin has bottom,
okay,
and has two hands showing up. That's all. They're all Malchut Shamayim. Now, how do you get all Malchut Shamayim? How do you apply it by accepting all Torah and Mitzvot, which is the next? The Torah and Mitzvot is the direction how to get there. All Malchut Shamayim, okay, I accept it. So what is it? Okay, by Yayim Shamoah Tishmu, then it goes the next one. But the Ayin Lamed shows exactly what
vertical and horizontal. Yeah. Vertical, that's price. Okay, okay.
From top, and then the Ayin goes
vertical, horizontal. Okay. Nechanami, very, 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 very nice. Very choshev. You're saying. Okay, so this is just an idea. You look at the Mishnayos, define the meaning of the oil. What is the oil? There are different parts to this apparatus. They have different functions. It's not a coincidence that in the that when we say every single day to Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, there are two translations. And those two translations seem to fit like a glove into the two different major parts of the yoke, which indeed is a machloikis rishonim as to what is the precise meaning of the yoke, of the oil. And I once said a Dvar Torah, in Masech de Brachos, the difference, we say Kriya Shema twice a day. We say it in the morning and at night. This when you go to sleep and when you wake up. And there are a lot of contradiction. There are a lot of the very, very big sugi. This is the first sugi, Masechta Brachos. And I once wanted this to hold our Torah is to show pi halacha is that the Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim of at night is a very different type of Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim by day. The average the average person, it's exactly the same thing. Whatever you do by day, you do at night. The Torah says you're supposed to recite Kriya Shema when you lie down and when you wake up, when you rise up. So you do exactly the same thing twice a day. But when you go through the sugya, there are a lot of problems. There are a lot of contradictions. The few Daf Gemara describing the Zman Kriya Shema Shel Shachris and the Zman Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. And the principles that the Gemara uses to define the Kriya Shema Shel Shachris are totally ignored when it comes to the Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. And the principles in the Yesodis the Gemara presents in dealing with the Kriya Shema Shel Arvis are ignored in the halachic sense when we deal with Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. What's going on? And after a while, it becomes clear that the goal of Kriyashma of Shachris and Arvis is very different. There's Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemai. And the Torah says, you shall Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echot. And I want you to acknowledge my existence twice a day. B'shach b'cham u'vikum echa. When you go to sleep and when you wake up. But they're very different. There are different dimensions to Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemai. And then the more you study, the more you realize, wait a minute, there are two translations for the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And then if the whole meaning of Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim is a yoke, and we go to Masechta Kelim and look at the pictures and see how the Rav, how the Rambam, the Rav, and the Bartan, and the Tosfos Yontif, and you start studying, and you become amazed. Hey, no one can in Judaism can't even agree on something so simple as what is the yoke? We have a yoke of an animal. What is the yoke? Is it this bar or is it this bar? Maybe it's the ring in the middle that brings it together. What exactly is it? And this bar is this function and this bar has that function. And then everything comes together to recognize is that indeed in the morning it would appear the Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim is there's only one God. And at night, it's the other translation. It's that Hashem, who's Hashem today, only our God, the day will come when He will be acknowledged as God over the entire world. There are two translations, and it appears the first translation is what a person should be mechavein for Shachris, and for Ma'ariv, you should be mechavein the other translation, which are completely different concepts. And it parallels the different parts of the yoke. Okay, so a lot of this goes. The reason why I said all this is because over here, with this part over here is telling us that Hashem is going to break the motehu, the yoke, me'oloyich u'mosirosayich anatek, and sever the cords. Part of the yoke are ropes. There are ropes that keep the yoke tied down. So we're discussing the different parts of the yoke, and in the time of Galus, we have another yoke, the Oil HaMalchus, the Oil of Shibud Malchus. We're under their control. Today in Galus, no matter how much we think that we own this country, we don't. Okay, we're just unwelcome guests in this world, in the world of Galus. And Eretz Yisrael, as much as we think that we're Balabatim, we know that we're not. And we always tell you, Sharon, what was it, Sharon, I forgot which vice president said, which prime minister said, maybe it was someone else, is that the goal of the prime minister is to make the American president happy. What? That's a mouthful. He it's a Freudian slip. It may sound like a joke, but it's no joke. It's no joke, okay? Even though on paper, the role of the prime minister of that, any head of state, is to provide security for the citizens. But one of the prime ministers, I'm not sure who it was, I forgot, is to make the American president happy. And that says it all. That says that we're not living in the times of Mashiach yet. If there's no sovereignty, the sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael is all subject to making the American president happy, because after everything is said and done, the power of America is enormous, and you don't want to get on his bad side. It goes to show that we're not living yet in Yemos HaMashiach. We're still subject to the yoke of the Umay Sa'olam. And here the Pasuk says the day will come, and the first example, really the first nation that put us under a yoke was Ashur. You can't say it was the Canaanim. They were just rodents. You know, yeah, living at home when you have some unpleasant visitors. Okay, some mice and rats and worse, they're a nuisance. So the Canaanim were always the Canaanim and the Eretz Yisrael during the conquest and all the years that we were fighting with the Canaanim and the other nations, they were just pests, a nuisance. But when Sancheriv came on the scene, it was different. He became the new Balabas. He became the new boss in town. and we were subject to his goodwill. He was enormous, he conquered the world. And he put us under his yoke. V'ata, and here the Navi is telling us that the day will come, and he was speaking in the time when Sancheirev was in his prime, when the Malchus of Asher was at its peak, controlled the entire world, and went in, and he lived during the time when he exiled the Aseres HaShvatim, and the only thing left was Yehuda, and even Yehuda was diminished only to Yerushalayim, it was the last stronghold. When Sancheirev came with an army, it says in the Pasuk of 800,000 soldiers, and some of the commentators say it means 800,000 generals, and each general had who knows how many thousands and tens of thousands of soldiers, which would add up to an astronomical number of people coming to attack Yerushalayim, and miraculously they all died, and eventually the Malchus of Asher folded and was obliterated by the next guy in town, the next egomaniac, none other than Nebuchadnezzar. So here, V'yata Eshbar Mot Toir, I'll break his moat, his beam, his rod, his staff, Me'aloich, and it's not telling us which moat, which beam, is this the beam that goes along the width of the animal or the length of the animal? Umosiro Sayich, and the ropes that keep this beam tied down upon you, and I will sever. Interesting, in the morning we say Kriya Shema, but before we say Kriya Shema, we make the bracha, Hamavir, Shein Ustumam Yav Apoy, and we mention, make the bracha of Matir Asurim. Okay, Matir Asurim. What is the prisoners? An osur means someone who's tied up. Where have we been tied up? Who put us in prison? Literally, Hashem releases the knots of the ropes that have kept us tied down. What ropes? And the answer is the chevle shena. When a person goes to sleep, he is the bracha we make every night of Hamapil chevle shena al enoy. The bracha of Hashem brings. When one goes to sleep, it's as if Hashem is tying us down, taking ropes and fastening us to our bed. When we are not in a state of consciousness, in Chazal's eyes, it's as if somebody has taken ropes and tied us down. In the morning when we wake up, we make a bracha, Hashem, you have released the prisoners. Matir Asurim, you have taken away the ropes of sleep. And then what do? We proceed not long after to make the Mimakabel Ol Malchus Shemayim. What happens when you Mikabel a yoke? You tie down the yoke. You don't just put the yoke on the animal, you have to fasten it to the animal. And the way it's fastened is with ropes. So there's a parallel. The ropes of our mundane existence first have to be severed in order that we can proceed and bring upon us the yoke of heaven and tie that down upon us. Similar to what it says here in this pasuk, Hashem says, I will break the yoke and the ropes of the nation of Ashur so that you can once again put upon yourself my yoke and tie it down. Replace the ropes and the rods of the Malchus of Ashur with my rods and my ropes to serve me. Okay, let's finish up with the Mitzudos David. Umosir Osayich, I'm on the second to last line on page 549. Umosir Osayich, Hamosir Osheyisem Kishulim Bohem, and I will sever. You'll no longer be humbled to the nation of Ashur. It is interesting that the word anatek means to sever. When it comes to sleep, we say matir, to untie. When you untie something, you're saving it for later. You don't want to damage it. When you don't care about something anymore, you take a knife and you cut. You don't need the ropes anymore. It doesn't say here, I'm going to be matir the moser osach. When the animal is done for the day, when it finishes doing its job, and you take the animal home, and you want to remove the plow from the animal, you don't take the ropes, take a knife and just slash the ropes. They cost good money, those ropes. Those are very expensive ropes. You untie it. You shoelace that knife, but you say, you don't go and take a knife when you come home at night and just cut through your shoelaces. I hope not. I don't know. You untie it. I no longer have shoelaces anymore. I have now silicon make-believe shoelaces. You should try, Rabbi Sai. It is one of the greatest inventions that since sliced bread. Sliced bread, you go online, you buy for $5, silicon make-believe shoelaces, and you place your shoelaces and they stretch and it's very tight and you never have to tie your shoelace again. No one will ever stop you in the street and say, excuse me, sir, I think you should tie your shoelaces. Okay, I'm getting off topic over here, but you don't go home and take a knife and cut and slash your shoelaces. You untie them because tomorrow morning you want to use them once again. So here, when it comes to, when we say in the morning, when you wake up in the morning, we say, Hashem, you're matir asur. Because we know that tonight, the next night, you're going to fall asleep again, and those ropes are going to be used once again. There's no such thing as bringing out of sleeping. But when it comes here to the yoke of Ashur, it says the word anatek. Anatek means to sever. So you'll never ever have to put this yoke upon your shoulders again. This reminds me of the famous dvar I tell you many, many times about Yoim Tabor Mago. It's one of the best dvars I ever heard on Torah. Chaim Siegel, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, when we were in 12th grade. So the policy was they would finish English in the middle of the year, in January. They would work it out that you would finish all of the curriculum for the state and city requirements, regions, 3.5 years. And most schools do the same thing. So some schools, they give college credits, they give you another half a year, they give you college credits, whatever they do. So in Chaim Berlin, when I went to yeshiva, the goal was for half a year, for about 4 months, you should only sit and learn. The last 4 months of 12th grade, you should have a taste of what it means to learn the entire day. Many of the students in my class were not planning on learning their whole life. They were off to the races. The next year, they all different people did all different things. Many of them ultimately went to college, went to school, got jobs, but the yeshiva wanted very much that the boys, before they go out into the world, they should have a taste of what it means to sit and learn, to learn the entire day with nothing else on your mind. So later in your life, when you'll encounter people that are in learning the entire day, who devote themselves to learning, you should be familiar with what it means to be devoted the entire day to nothing but learning. That's what they did for the last 4 months in Chaim Berlin when I was, I don't know what they do now, I have no idea. Not, whatever it is. But he made a very beautiful su'uda. When we finished the regents, took our finals, we finished the finals, he made a su'uda. And at the su'uda he said that on Tu B'Av, on the 15th day of Av, What does it say? What did they do? It's called Yoim Tabor Mago. The people in the Beis HaMikdash, they chopped wood for the Mizbeach. You need wood. You go out into the forest, you chop wood, you inspect the wood. There should not be worms, no moisture, it should be dry. And you use that wood for the fire of the Mizbeach. And they would cut wood the entire summer. When the calendar came to the date of the 15th day of Av, that's it. The wood chopper season, how much wood can a wood chopper chop? That's over. Okay, it's over. The season is over. Why? Because it's not hot enough. The sun is no longer in its intensity, and it's not going to dry out the wood enough for it to be suitable to be used on the Mizbeach. So he stopped. So they made a party. They made a party that it's over. And what did they do for the remainder of the season? They went to Beis Medrash and they learned Torah. That's what it says in the Chazal. It says they stopped. They now were free to do nothing but devote themselves to Hashem. And they made a party. And it was called the Yom Tabor Magal, the day when they broke the axe. Shav Chaim Siegel, Zecher Levracha, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, asked the question, why does it say Yom Tabor, they broke the axe? When the winter is over and you have a shovel that you use to shovel the snow, do you throw it in the garbage? Do you give it to the sanitation man and say, here, put it in the truck, throw it in the garbage? You don't do that, you don't break it. You put it in the closet for next year. Correct? No one's taking their shovel and breaking it. You're putting your shovel in the closet for next year. So when the wood chopping season is over, they should take the shovel, which is expensive, and they should put it in the closet for next year. But yet it says in the Chazal, they took the shovel and they broke it. The axe, the magel, they took the axe, and they took the axe and they destroyed it. Tabor means to break. They broke it. What are you breaking it for? Bal tashchis. No one's breaking their shovel. So after the winter season is over, so why are you breaking the axe when the wood chopping season is over? And he said an incredible answer. Incredible answer, which still has a roshim on me my whole life, this answer. He said, the answer is, if as long as the shovel, the axe, is complete and it's in the closet, your mind is on the shovel. Yeah, right now, I'm going to go sit and learn. I'm going to go to the Beis Medrash. But soon, couple of months, it's going to be business as usual. If you go on vacation and you take your smartphone and you answer every single email from the office, it's not a vacation. Vacation is, you leave your smartphone at home. Get a new phone for your vacation. Leave your smartphone. No one can reach you. You can't reach them. Who cares what's going on? That's a real vacation. Completely sever yourself from, as long as you have the shovel in one piece in the closet, it's not possible to fully delve into another activity. In order for the people, when the wood chopping season is over, to fully devote themselves to the service of Hashem, they took the shovel and they destroyed it. They destroyed it. There's nothing else. We're done forever. Oh, but next year? All right. Next year we'll worry about it. We'll start all over again. Right now, in my mind, I have to know there's nothing in this world but what I am doing. I'm devoting myself to the service of Hashem for the next couple of months, whatever it was. And therefore, I don't want to have in the back of my mind, yeah, the shovel, the axe is there in the closet in one piece. Because that means in a couple of weeks, I'll be back business as usual. It was the Yoim, the day when they broke the axe. You destroyed it. You have to sever yourself completely from your environment in order that your mind can be free, can be released from your past to fully devote yourself to what you're about to do. And if in the future you'll need to go back into business to chop more wood for the Mizbeach, okay, you'll get another axe. You'll pay a few dollars, you'll get another axe. That's the difference between breaking something and untying a rope. Cutting a rope and untying a rope. If you untie the rope, it will be back tomorrow. The Ribbono Shel Olam said to Klal Yisrael, when Ashur, I'm going to get rid of Ashur, Umoser Rosayich, doesn't say Matir. Doesn't say I will untie the ropes of Ashur. It says Anatek. Anatek means to sever. The ropes are no longer functional. You are free forever from this yoke of Sancheirif. No such thing anymore. Okay, over here the Mitzudos doesn't want to say to the extreme that I said it, but the other Mefarsh that say this, Enyan HaTek Mimakava means to dislodge from its place. Okay, other commentators say HaTek means to actually to sever. But does not say the word matir means to untie. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk, one more pasuk to the end of the section. Pasuk Yidal, Vitziva Lai Hashem. Hashem will give a command concerning Jewish people. Lo yizara mi shimcha oid, mi beis, you will not be uprooted. You see over here the word yizara. Okay, we'll see, let's read the whole pasuk. We'll see precisely in the mitzvahs. A very unusual word of the word zera. Yizara, mi beis elokecha, achris, from the home of your, the beis hamigdash, I will cut out the pesel, umasecha, asim, kivrecha, ki kaloisa. Okay, let's see what that means in the Mitzudas David. Pasuk Gidal, Vitziva, alayich Hashem. Hashem will give a command. Mul melech asher yoma. Pasuk Gidal, according to the Mitzudas, is going back to address the king of Ashur. So we're shifting back and forth. Pasuk Yudbeis was a message to Ashur. Pasuk Yudgimel was a message to Klal Yisrael. And now we're vacillating, we're going back to Pasuk Yudal, we're going back to the king of Ashur. Mol melech Ashur yoymar, lo yizara mishimcha oid, return loymar, lo yimloich mi mizarecha. His translation is yizara, your seed. Yizara means your seed. Anyone from your seed, a descendant, will no longer be a king. Lo yizara mishimcha oid. Okay, look further. Achris pesel masecha ki shamama tiyeh, your nation, all of the idols and molten images are going to be obliterated. Osim kivrecha, ritzin aloymar. Ani asim l'cha kever hameyucha l'cha, I'm going to make for you a unique grave. Ki ani elochem b'cha, I will fight with you. Ki kaloisa, chayisa kal bedatcha, why am I going to go out against you? It's a very frightening pasuk. It was kal bedatcha l'shloyach l'choreif klapei mayla. You had no conscience. It was nothing in your eyes. It's an incredible pasuk. Your attitude. Hashem over here is coming to take Sancheriv to task for his attitude. Attitude. Nothing. You couldn't care less. It did not weigh down upon you the seriousness of what you're doing. It's a very powerful limud musa. Sometimes you see people, they do aveiros. They know what they're doing. Premeditated, right? Premeditated murder. You know exactly what you're doing. You know your enemy. You have an agenda. You know exactly what you want to do. To some degree, there is a redemption in that, because at least you recognize what you're doing. You recognize the sin. Okay, you're an evil person, and you will suffer greatly. But when a person doesn't even consider you, he brings enormous grief and harm. Just klachar yad, you're so insignificant in my eyes. I don't have to even deal with you. I just totally ignore you. This is an incredible chutzpah, an incredible unimaginable chutzpah to do evil with an attitude. You're worthless. You're not. I don't even consider you worthy of my thoughts to take into consideration what I'm doing. That is a league by itself. Ki kaloisa, hayisa kal bedatcha l'shloyach. It was just light in your eyes to send forth your hand l'choreif klapei mala, to insult the Ribbono shel Olam, ulechein ekach mimcha nakam. I'm going to take from you Sancheriv an extra special dosage of revenge. This pasuk here, these two words, ki kaloisa, is a very enlightening. It's an eye opener. Middle of nowhere, middle of Nachum, it answers a lot of questions. It opens up a whole new realm of trying to define the difference between Sancheriv and Nebuchadnezzar. Can you say the same thing about Nebuchadnezzar? Can you say about Nebuchadnezzar ki kaloisa, that Ribbono shel Olam is just nothing? I don't think so. Maybe I'm wrong. We spent a lot of time on going through different svarim of Nach, where there's an enormous amount of material where we learned about Nebuchadnezzar. One pasuk that comes to mind is the pasuk of Adamer lo Elyon. Nebuchadnezzar said, Adamer lo Elyon, I'm going to be just like Hashem. Nebuchadnezzar, you get the impression, he knew what he was doing. He took it very seriously. He was extremely wicked, extremely cruel.
Wasn't he called the Eben of Hashem?
In one context, yes. He's a very complicated person. Yodea Ribbono Yomeschaven Limroid, but he knew the Ribbono, who exactly the Ribbono Shleilim is, and it weighed down upon him what he was doing, and he made a very deliberate, conscious decision, but he understood the severity of what he's doing, and he did it anyway. That makes it worse and makes it better. Making it worse means the rebellion is that much, is incredibly great, but at least you know what you're doing. Sancheriv, his disregard for the Ribbono Shel Olam and his lightness, Hashem, I couldn't care less about you, I'll do whatever I want, I don't care, I know I'm causing all these people pain and suffering in Yibes HaMikdash, you're nothing to me. It's a chutzpah. It's an incredible, incredible chutzpah. And it's very painful. It's a very painful attitude. You know, the worst way you can insult a person is not to consider them. You're not even worthy of my response. There are different ways to, if you want to insult somebody, you have to go learn how to insult people with intensity. So one thing is, you see the person and you say something nasty. Okay. And then there's another way to insult a person, which is usually much deeper. You don't even acknowledge he exists. Not acknowledging a person exists in a sense is a greater insult than approaching him and saying something nasty. If you say something nasty, it means, wow, you're a very great person. I know that. I'm extremely jealous. And I don't think you deserve what you have. And it's not fair. It's not fair. And I'm gonna take it away from you. In the process, you're acknowledging, you know, that you're worthy. You're a worthy opponent. But when you ignore someone, that's even greater. That's an even greater insult.
No third way. If you treat me like I'm not there,
interesting.
Then
you're
I
saying
have a big problem.
Saying the rebuttal. You're saying the same. You're saying something very deep.
We're still having a conversation.
Wow, you're saying an incredible chiddush. What he's saying is that the Torah in Parashas Bechukosai, he's saying is Hashem is gonna punish us by speaking to us. He's gonna insult us. Klal Yisrael, I know who you are, and I'm gonna punish you for your averos. Kisavai. The punishment is, I'm going to ignore you. I'm just going to ignore you. It's a much greater punishment. When you the whole theme of Parashas Kisava is, Hashem just ignores you. You don't exist. You just don't exist. Let the world go on. Let the world, the Hester upon him is so great. He's saying very good. Parashas Kisava, Hashem is speaking to us. Klal Yisrael, you're a bad boy. I have a frask. Give another frask. Take away your food and do this to you and beat you up. Hashem is present and Hashem is beating us up. Wow, we're worthy. We're worthy of Hashem coming to beat us up. That's a compliment. Okay, we're going to be defeated. We're going to suffer. Rachman al-Tzlan. But in the suffering, at least you acknowledge that we exist. It's much deeper insult when you just you're not even worthy. You don't even exist. And Hashem disappears. Kaviyachol. And lets the Umayis Ha'olam just make out of us nothing. That's the difference between Sancheriv and Ashur. Ashur, these words are extremely critical. Middle of nowhere, right in the middle of this book. Let's see the Nachum right smack in the middle of it. Right in the middle of the book. Who would ever know? What?
Of the Pasuk, I mean, the way I look at it, the Rega Katona Safir in Yeshaya, is that God is telling B'nai Yisrael, look what happens when I look away for a short time. Look what happens to you. You need Hashkafa. You need, you know,
divine protection wherever you go.
Every minute.
Absolutely. Okay, so this is Chishuv. Now let's now there's another interesting point I want to make, and that is, Osim kivrecha. This we have to delve into this much deeper. I don't know. Maybe we'll see the farsha more detail. Is that Hashem says to Sancheriv, I'm going to make for you a grave. It's pretty good. A lot of Jews in the Holocaust don't have graves. Okay, many of the 6 million do not have a grave. Okay, no kever Yisrael. And here, our worst enemy, who has exiled the Aseres HaShvatim, Hashem says to Hashem, you Rasha Marusha, you're the ultimate, you're the epitome of evil. I'm going to obliterate your country to the point where there's not going to even be a museum. There won't be any artifacts that you can even make one exhibit. But you, Sancheriv, the words of the Pasuk are, Osim Kivrecha. I'm going to make for you a special grave. Now, it's used here in the context of, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to obliterate you. But it still says, I'm going to make for you a kever. That's not fair. Why should you have a kever? Why should you have a kever? A rasha. Having a kever is a pretty good thing, according to Chazal. Okay, offer ata, v'al offer toshuv. We don't know what this is, okay? These are all in Yoni Kabbalah, but the Mesorah is clear as day. It's a very big bracha to be buried. Okay, it's clear as day that it's a tremendous bracha for a person at the end to be zoiche, to have a kever Yisrael. Not everyone was zoiche to that. And no one has any guarantees, anything. Okay, 9-11, the people were vaporized. Mamash vaporized. Nothing was left. There are many people, they have nothing left of them. You hear about bone fragments, this, that, but there's some people that have nothing. Mamash, nothing. Completely vaporized. Never found any DNA for some of the victims. That's a horror. Chazal say a person has to be mispalu until the last shovel. And the truth is, today, that doesn't mean anything because they'll dig you up. Today, every other day here in the news, they want to build a road here, they want to build a road over there, and they dig up this body, dig up that body, and they have this cemetery and that cemetery. Just because you're in the ground doesn't mean anything. They'll come one day and they'll take you out of the ground. There's no guarantee for nothing. And here it says about Sancheriv Osim Kivrecha, so this demands understanding. It demands further investigation. We'll go through Mefarshim, we'll see maybe some things of why, despite the fact he was the epitome of evil. And the Pasuk here says, ki kaloisa, that you acted in a way, it was kal, it was nothing to you to behave the way you behaved and destroy Klal Yisrael and try to destroy the Beis HaMikdash and to exile the Aseres HaShvatim and bring upon Klal Yisrael permanent damage. And yet in the same expression it says, Osim Kivracha. So let's translate the Pasuk one more time. The Pasuk one more time according to the Mesudah says, V'tziva lech Hashem. Hashem will give the command. He will give the order. Lo yizara mishimcha oy. That's very poetic. The Mesudah David is not usually into this type of deep poetry, which means there will not be any seed. They will not come from you, from your name, a descendant. No one today can say, I'm an Oranical from Sancheriv. Okay, even Haman was Zoiche to children. B'nei Banov shel Haman lamdu Torah b'bnei Barak. How do you like that? Nevuzaradan, who murdered 1.1 million people with his own hands, he wiped out, he set himself the best of Klal Yisrael. It says he was Megayer. And from him came Rebbe Meir. Hayitochen? Could it be such a thing? Okay, Hitler. There are people they have in Eretz Yisrael. There are people that are blood descendants. Is that true? Is that true? Hitler. People that they're blood descendants. I think Ger also is. Gerim. How do you explain this? I don't know. Don't ask me. Don't look at me. Here, Sancheriv was zoiche to a curse like none other. Lo yizara mishimcha od. Nothing. There will be no zera from you. Your evil is so great. No one's going to say about you, Mibnei Bonav Shol Sancheriv, Lomdu Torah Mibnei Barak. doesn't say that about Sancheirif. Okay, that's
well, when the Gemara says that is about the Nebuchadnezzar, when it says don't go there.
You know, also, he also had nothing, Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar says there's nothing left.
Nothing left.
No, it says that, don't, you know, that with Mnei Bonav, he said, maybe you want to say that, don't, no, too evil.
Too evil, exactly. Here also, sending is too evil. And this is the translation of the Mitzudos. Lo yizara mishim cho'oid, and what it means by Haman, what it means by these other people, who knows? No one has any understanding of what these things mean. Okay, mi base, then it goes on, mi base Elohecha, from the home of your God, Elohecha, according to the parish of the Mitzudos David, is choil. Choil. It's not referring to the Beis HaMikdash. It's the from the home of Elohecha, of your God, your temple. In Ashur, it appears to have been a religious country. It wasn't pagans. They were idol worshippers. Idol worship. They had Elohecha. They had gods, and I will wipe out Achris Pesel Umasecha. Mine. What? I do actually. I sometimes forget. Also, I usually always keep it offline. Always, but sometimes I have to turn it on because of an emergency, whatever, and I forget to put it back on.
Yeah.
Okay. Mi base. Elohecha. Now here's the question. The question over here is the word Elohecha chol kodesh? What's an afkamina? So we see all the mafarshim. We started by telling this pasuk is this, who's he addressing? He's addressing Sancheirif. We're going to see that not everyone agrees to that. This pasuk may indeed be addressing Klal Yisrael, and when it says mi beis Elohecha, refers to the beis hamikdash, and then Elohecha, then it's Elohecha. It refers that Hashem is saying, I'm going to get rid of all the idols at the this time in the Beis HaMikdash, at the time of Sancheirif, the Aseres HaShvat, there was a lot of problems going on in the Beis HaMikdash, in different tekufas, and they were idols. We learned all about all the idols in Yecheskel, what was going on there, towards the end. I will remove the idols from the Beis HaMikdash. Lamai Nafgemina, there's a halacha, that when a Sefer Torah, and he comes to Hashem's name, he's not allowed to write Hashem's name unless he goes to mikvah. It's puzzle. Mom, Sefer Torah is puzzle. The Sefer Torah, a Sefer is a Baal Keri, and he writes Hashem's name before he goes to mikvah, it's puzzle. The rest of the Sefer Torah, it's not. But the Shem Hashem must be written in Tahara, and he must say, L'Shem Kiddushas Hashem. I'm writing this for the sake of Hashem's name. If he does not do that, or does not go to mikvah, the Sefer Torah is puzzle. And the same thing is true when it comes to Nevi'im. So the question is, there are many Shemois in the Torah, and there are different commentators who have a machloikis, is it Kodesh or is it Chol? And you have to know the Nafkamina when you write the Shem, you have to know the Perish Amilos. A Sefer just can't be a robot. The Sefer has to have knowledge of the Pshuta Shel Mikra to know when to have kavana l'shem kedushas Hashem, and when to write, when he can write stam. Probably the classic example is vayikra b'shem Hashem in the beginning in parashas Noach. Os chuchal likra b'shem Hashem. So Rashi has two perushim: is it kodesh or chol? The Targum actually says it's kodesh. The Targum Yonis, the Targum Tung Unkelus says it's kodesh, and it used to be we didn't start. It used to be.
That's the difference where you make the aliyah.
Right.
It's a
Pella. It's really a wonder why today we've changed. It really bothers me because how do you translate the word Bereshis? How are you taught in kindergarten to translate the word Bereshis? Aren't we a nation of tradition? We're a nation of tradition. Bereshis. How do you translate that word?
In the beginning.
Who says that's this translation? Unkelus. Bekadmin. Rashi disagrees. Rashi says it means towards the beginning. The world began long ago, and it was towards. There was already a Shemayim Varetz. The Torah begins in the middle. There was already a Shemayim and the Aretz. Hashem created this long ago, and Bereshis Bara Elokim in the beginning of the creation of towards that era. Of of the creation of the Shemayim and the Aretz, but already existed beforehand, the earth was Toyu Vavohu. But Uncle says no. In the beginning, the first thing Hashem did was He created the Shamayim and the Aretz. That is the way the Uncle translates the pasuk, and that's the way we've all been taught. Rashi disagrees. Art Scroll, to their credit, I'm not chas v'shalom criticizing Art Scroll. Who am I? God forbid I should say a bad word about them. I'm a product of Art Scroll. Art Scroll came along and they made a commentary, and their commentary is, they write clear as day, is according to Rashi. We're not following the Targum. We're giving you a translation according to Rashi. And therefore, they translate the pasuk Bereshis towards the beginning of the creation of the heaven and the earth, like Rashi. Now, but I just want to point out, but that's not the Masorah. Art Scroll is built on a foundation of Masorah. The Masorah is to translate Bereshis like the Targum. I know, as I'm saying, it's a little bit straight. I mean, the following Rashi, because Rashi is the Rabban Shal Yisrael, the Messiah, but the truth is, the Messiah really, there's an even more ancient Messiah, and that's the Uncleus. And that Messiah tells us that the translation is not towards the beginning, the Messiah is in the beginning. And a classic example of something we're doing wrong is that today, in every single shul, and probably the whole world already today, is the on Parshas Noach, they stop, Oz Parshas, Oz, no, not Bereshis, Parshas Bereshis, Oz Huchal Likroi B'Shem Hashem, we always would stop there. That was the end of the Aliyah.
The old Chumash map, that is.
That's the way everyone did it. Why? Because according to Uncleus, there's nothing wrong. It's Kodesh. And now it's a Nayadar. A Nayadar, we no longer want to follow the Mesorah of Uncleus, which is a lot older than Rashi. And we've embraced one of Rashi's two Perushim that says, Asucha l'kroi b'shem Hashem is Avodah Zorah. Avodah Zorah. Oh, you're not allowed to be Messiah b'dovah ra. So let's stop before that. Let's not be Messiah there. To me, I don't know what the answer is. To me, it's a wonder how can we take upon ourselves, whoever made these decisions, to change. It was done the other way, clear as day. We always stopped Asuch HaLikur B'Shem Hashem for generations, and that was obviously built upon the foundation of the Uncleus. Just like Bereshis Baruch Elokim, we've always been taught for generations in the beginning, like Uncleus, and we have the greatest respect for Rabban Shel Kol Yisrael. Rashi is Rashi, it's the Halakha of Rashi, it's the blood of Klal Yisrael. But the Messiah was still to translate Bereshis in the beginning. The Messiah is Asuch HaLikur B'Shem Hashem. It's Kodesh. No, today it's a new dar. Today we've changed Asuch HaLikur. No good. Not good enough for us. Bereshis, no, you don't translate in the beginning. Because that's Apikursis. You have to translate like Rashi. Towards the beginning. I don't know. I feel something is wrong. I don't know, obviously, a lot of things that I think are obviously, I find more and more, I find myself on the wrong side of the fence 95% of the time. So, but I'm just, no, we're here to learn, just point out. Here, I was telling you all that as a tangent from Mibes Elokecha, according to the Mitzudais, Mibes Elokecha is referring to the nation of Ashur, your temples. It's a revelation that the nation of Ashur was a pagan. Pagan means, was an idol worship. Pagan means no, right? Pagan means no, nothing, no belief, like atheists. Nothing, totally. I don't even pagan as an atheist. It means just total nothing. Atheist at least is about Madrega. An atheist, I told you, what is an atheist? An atheist is a person who wakes up every single day and he says, Ribbono shel Olam, thank you so much for making me an atheist. A pagan is, he just wakes up in the morning and just nothing. Nothing. What? No, a pagan is, I mean, a pagan is nothing. Pagan is garnished, zero. There's no current going through his head. An idol worshiper, He wakes every morning, he bows down to Yashka. Okay? You have to know your religion.
That's
he got.
Dream,
what?
An animal worshiper is higher than.
Yeah, of course. At least has a sense of religion, has a conscience, that there's something above him, beyond him. Of course. I mean, they can turn into an act of cruelty. A pagan has no pulse. A pagan has no pulse. An idol worshiper is a religious person, but he's misguided. He's misguided. It's very easy to make an idol worshiper into a Jew, because at least he believes in religion. Just show him the true religion. Okay? A pagan has no pulse. Mamish, no pulse. An atheist? I'm telling you the truth. I'm convinced of this. You got to go talk to these guys. Anyone who tells you they're an atheist, it means every morning they wake up and they say, Moda Ani. Moda Ani lefanecha melechai v'kayam, for making me an atheist. Have a nice day.
There is a difference between atheist and agnostic.
What's an agnostic? I don't know what is that.
Yes, you don't believe in any higher stuff.
And an atheist?
No,
there's a force. Atheist is energy. There's energy in this world, right? It's some type of Chinese religion. There's an energy goes to your body. Okay, but an atheist is a very funny person. Anyone that says he's an atheist is a very funny person. You have to engage him in conversation. Kimat, all people who claim they're atheists are really very religious people. They're all shomer Torah mitzvahs. The people who make a statement that they are an atheist, engage them in conversation. You'll have a really great time, and you'll discover very quickly that they're very religious. They really are. Okay, the people who are pagans have no, don't make that claim that they're atheists. They're just blank. Have this blank look on their face. They got a problem. They have no pulse going through their bodies. Some, like some Chinese people like this, a lot of them. There's no one home. There's mamish, no one to talk to. You knock on their head, hello. There's no one to talk to. Okay, over here it says, we learned last week is that Ashur, there is no relics, there is no artifacts. So we really don't know anything about Ashur. This pasuk is a revelation that it was a religious country. Because it says in this pasuk that in Ashur, at least according to the Mitzudois, who learns that this pasuk is Ashur, it was Mibes Elohecha, there were temples. And in the temples, there was a Pesel and a Masecha. We have no idea what kind of Pesel and Masecha they worship, but they had something there. And it says that Hashem says, I'm going to wipe them out. Osim Kivrecha, I'm going to make that into your grave. Because Kikalois. Okay, so tomorrow we'll do these Pesukim with Rashi. We'll stop over here. We'll take a short break. We have some really good stuff today in the Sefer Chasidim, some really good schmack stuff.